sure is good to be here tonight. It's a privilege, always a privilege to come. I tried to work this out so that my family would be with me. I get tired of places that I like to go. I get tired of doing them by myself. So sometimes if I'm off in Pennsylvania somewhere or something, well, then I'll travel by myself. But come up in this neck of the woods, I enjoy bringing my family with me. But it just didn't happen this time. So I'll pass their greetings on to y'all, okay? So it's sure good to have y'all here tonight. How many here have already filled out your application for the fall medical team? Well, we're looking for more people. Don't let me down now. Look, I even brought some more. I brought some more cards. If you forgot what the QR code looks like, you can sign up on the back. And I'm just being sarcastic. I want you to pray about it, and if the Lord leads you, we'd be happy to have you. It's going to be a good team. This year has already been crazy with medical teams. We started out in February with the medical team from Evangelistic Faith Missions, the first one, and they left, and then three other medical teams, one week right after the other. When I got done, I said, I'll never do this again. I had four straight weeks of medical teams without a day to buy groceries even in the middle. And anyway, I learned a little lesson. So it's fun, but fun has its limits, don't it? Oh, my goodness. So anyway, all right. So I'm missing a boy in the picture. The problem is that we have a man in Lexington, Kentucky, who's so kind. He comes on a June medical team, and he always takes our family pictures when we come home. And we have updated pictures, but he is supposed to take them next week. So some of our pictures, as we run through here, some of the pictures are an older picture or don't have everybody in it. Now, this is a recent picture. Well, we've got Kendrick missing Caleb. He was off at GBS this week, and everybody's getting just a little bit older. So Kendrick's 22. Caleb is 18. Kenton is 16. Caden is 11. Kyson, he just turned 7. And when we got to the States, Kleanna turned 5, or she turned 5 the day before we came to the U.S. So anyway, so the Lord is blessing us. It's good to be home this summer. I'll share a little bit about the adoption process. Many of you know, have seen some of these slides, and this is San Luis. There's 10,000 people. They live in the urban area of San Luis. Our mission field in this area is 45,000 people because there's another 35,000 that live in the suburbs of San Luis and 10,000 that live in the city. Every time I think about the clinic ministry and I think over 10,000 babies have been born in the clinic, I think it's interesting that's enough to populate this town. And a little bitty clinic over on the corner of town can have that much impact on a community is pretty awesome. So we started this trip. We were home in the summer of 2023, and we were doing, well, actually, I'm going to rewind just a little bit to IHC 2023. So I was sitting in the bleachers, in the chairs, and my phone vibrated, and I pulled it out and looked at it, and it was a Honduras number, and I said, they can wait, and I put it back, and it vibrated again. I pulled it out and looked at it, and I said, they can wait, and I put it back in. It vibrated about four times, that thing vibrated. I said, somebody must want me. So I got up, and I went outside, and I made a telephone call, and when the person answered on the other end, she informed me that she was the boss of the Child Protective Services in Honduras, and I have a 3-year-old girl for you. Do you want her? She didn't tell me her name. She didn't tell me what she looked like. She didn't tell me if she had any physical problems. She didn't tell me how she was abandoned. She said, you got an hour to decide if you want this little girl. Well, let me tell you something. You talk about try your faith real quick. Because when we started this process, we went back to Honduras in January of 2020. December of 2020. When we started this process, we have lots of abandoned children around us. It would be easy to find one and say, we'd like to adopt this child. But in Honduras, if you go to them and you say, I'd like to adopt this child, they try everything in the book to make sure you don't adopt that child. Okay? It's the craziest thing that you've ever seen. So what we did is we went to them and filled out an application. And, you know, you feel kind of bad with all the details that you put in there of how many physical problems you're willing to take, and what color, how white to how brown you're willing to take. And it's just incredible. And so we fill all this stuff out and give it to them. Then they find us a baby. And they call us and tell us that they have a baby. So we were sitting on pins and needles for several years waiting on them to call. And sitting in IHC was when that telephone call came. Now, we were home the summer of 2023. We were doing furlough and visiting churches and stuff when they called us and told us that we could come and visit her. Okay, so we hurried back to Honduras because we had a medical team coming the first weekend in October. So we ran back and went to the children's home, we met them at a park to meet Cleanna the first time. So it was interesting, the other night I was talking to her, and I was sorting through all these pictures. She loves to look at these pictures of the children's home where she was and the people she knew. And the we did take her back to visit the children's home. And it was interesting. We got ready to go. We're like, "You want to stay here?" And she's like, "Oh, no, 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 no." She said, "I'm ready to go." But she was happy to go back and see her friends and her family and the people that were there. And I asked her, I showed her these pictures, and I said, "Cleanna, do you see how sad you are?" I said, "Man, you were so sad that day. Why were you so sad?" And she stood there a minute, and then she looked at me, and she said, "Because I didn't want to leave them." That had never dawned in on me, the attachment that she had, even though it was a dysfunctional system where she was, that was her system. And that was what she was used to. She didn't know what a mama and a daddy was. She called the people that took care of her aunts and uncles in the children's home. So when she came to live in our home and she had to, I mean, mom and dad was a new thing, okay? The brothers, she had brothers in the children's home. But it's been quite an adjustment to have her in the home. Of course, we've got five boys. We don't have any clue what to do with girls, okay? So we don't know what part is girl and what part is children's home experience that she had when she came to our home. But it's interesting when Tiffany and I look back and we map where she came, how she came to us, and how she is now. It's pretty incredible to see the difference in her and the changes in her life and the stability. When she came to us, she didn't smile. She didn't laugh. She was not ticklish. She had a wall that she could drop down in front of you, and it was her way of hiding her pain. She's a tough, we call her a tough cookie. Okay, you know what a tough cookie is, right? Well, she's a tough cookie. She can push her way through something. But I remember as we began to love on her and we began to care for her and we began to play with her and spend time with her. And Tiffany one morning was doing her hair and she looked up and she said, "Mommy, that tickles." And we began to talk to some of the psychologists that were working in the system with us. And they're like, "That's a sign of healing." There were some other things that came along that she started doing, and you could see the healing coming back into her life. Even after 3 years, all the hurt and the damage and stuff that had been done, it's interesting to see healing come back into her life. This was a picture. She was playing. She was all day with us, not very much happiness, but she got on a little toy over on one side, and she started making play tortillas. And so she was making me fake tortillas to eat. And that was what was making her day. So the day came. We've been in the process since January of 2021. And thank the Lord, January of 2025 came along, and they finally called us, and they said, "Come sign the papers." And so we arrive in Tegucigalpa, and, you know, we've talked to other missionaries and stuff, and they're like, "Daniel, we can't believe how fast you got this done." And I'm like, "Fast? Does this sound fast to you? This don't sound fast to me." They're like, "Oh, but Daniel, there's other missionaries that have been doing this for 10 years, and their adoptions are still not done with Honduras. Honduras is one of the worst countries to adopt from just because of all the politics and the paperwork that you have to do." Now, this is our paperwork. That looks exaggerated here, okay? It really was not that thick, okay? But it was 10 to 11 inches thick. When I would go into their office, I could look at all the files in the office and I could find my file because the normal file is only about 4 inches thick and ours was double, a little bit over double of what everybody else's was. So when I would go in, I would say, "I'd like to check on my file and see where things are." Those people knew me by name. I think they were so tired of seeing me. I told them one time on the telephone, I said, "If you had not called me, I was bringing my pillow and my sleeping bag and we were going to spend the night." And she says, Daniel, I have no doubt that you were going to do that. And I really was. I was planning to do it. Now, the last thing came down to this day that we're here signing papers. We were counting down the days that we were going to run out of time because we had medical teams coming. Tiffany and I had already decided we were going to pack up all the homeschool, and we were traveling to the Capitol 5 hours away, and we were going to set up homeschool in their office. Now, that's getting some serious stuff, you know? But they, I think they got wind of it, and they decided they didn't want us doing homeschool in their office. So we went in and sat down and signed papers, we found out the Lord gave us an answer to prayer in the middle of this because there are a lot of Americans that did not know the process. And when you do a national adoption, they require you to stay in the country for 5 years after the adoption's completed. The child cannot leave the country for 5 years after the adoption's completed. And fortunately, into the process, we found out about this and were able to switch to an international adoption, which costs a whole lot more to complete the international adoption. But it gave her citizenship, gave her... when we flew into Atlanta and landed in Atlanta in the 1st of April... her naturalization process was completed at that point. Now, as things go, you know, I've blamed everything on how bad Honduras is, how Honduras takes so much time to do everything. So last week, we go to get her a Social Security card. She's got a passport, she's got a visa, and she's got her U.S. visa in it that shows her citizenship until her papers come. And so I go to get her a Social Security card, and the lady looks at me and she says, I'm sorry, but you got to go through the adoption process all over again. We have to adopt her again. So this is the second adoption we'll go through before it's all done. So we have more paperwork to look forward to. Tiffany said, I'm glad that's you taking care of all that and not me. So on our way here, it was her first flight. They gave her wings and gave her her certificate and the boys' wings and certificates. And the pilot was happy to welcome them up in the office, up in the front of the airplane. And as we came through immigration... Officer McIntyre, I think that's his name, he was sitting back there and he had to go through all of, I had a manila envelope full of papers that he had to go through and make sure everything was there and then put a stamp in her passport. And so he just handed me the passport and I said, okay, thank you. He said, have a good day. And I said, you mean that's it? He said, yeah, that's it. I was like, can't you at least like tell her welcome to America or something? And he sat there and he says, well, I guess I could. And he got up and he walked out there and he said, well, young lady, welcome to America. And I said, well, thank you very much. Can we have a picture with you? He said, never done that either before, but I guess that'd be okay. So we got a picture and the video to coming into the United States. She turned 5 years old. It's kind of incredible that that time has flown. Part of the advantage that we had is because we live in Honduras, we were able to take temporary custody of her ahead of time. If we had been a normal family from the United States adopting, we would not have received her until January, this past January. But since we live in Honduras, we had her a year and 3 or 4 months ahead of the adoption schedule being done. Tiffany and I looked at each other and we're like, with everything that we've been through in a year and a half, I can't imagine if we were just receiving her and starting off at the beginning. But God's doing something big in her life, and I can't wait to see what God's going to do. I told Tiffany, if we can get her to give her heart to Jesus at a young age, it'll help heal a lot of those wounds and a lot of things that she will struggle with and have difficulties with. But she comes and she puts her hands around my neck and she says, I love you, Daddy. I'm like, I love you too. I get accused of being wrapped around her finger, but it's not true. Our ministry in Honduras, many of you know, we have several different facets of ministry. So I'm just going to go through some of those. Our Bible school is going. These are some of the young men that are studying. We have some of the things that they have implemented this year. Some of them have been carryover from other years. But the Bible school boys, they have actually gone out into the community and gotten kids from the community that don't have good home lives and stuff. And they started bringing them in. You know, we've got the long runway that runs in front of through the middle of our property. So they'll take those boys, that makes a really good soccer field, and they evangelize those boys and they play soccer with those boys. Another thing that they have picked up is one of the local schools across the town wanted a Bible class in their school. They had a pastor giving the Bible class before, and the pastor moved somewhere else. And so they have called the Bible school and want our young men, our young students to now come. And so now they're teaching. They are going in, I believe, every day of the week and teaching Bible classes to those students. It's just a really good opportunity. When we went to Honduras, these students would go out and pass, they'd have a church out in the community, and they would ride the horse, a horse out to their churches. But it's interesting to see how things have changed, because we got to the point to where all of a sudden they didn't want to ride horses anymore, because there were a few more people that had cars. And if they rode the horse out to their church, they couldn't get a ride back to school. They had to ride the horse back, right? So they decided they would walk out to their church and then try to get a ride back. And that has developed now to where most of them have motorcycles and are four-wheelers, and that makes a big difference. In December this last year, every 2 years, we have church conference and also have Bible school graduation. So we had some graduates this year. I don't know which ones are residency and which ones are extension in the mix, but we have a pretty good group of extension students that are also studying in the ministry. Our churches, we still have around 54 self-sustained churches, and I believe we have a few more church plants than that. This just gives you an idea of what conference time and when the pastors and the people come together. The conferences each, they have a conference 1 year, and then they have pastors retreat the next year, and they still got these old wooden comfortable benches that everybody sits on. But man, the fellowship, they love coming together and eating their beans and tortillas and being able to fellowship together. Brother Sidney Grant is in the process of starting an organization called PAS, which is like IHC, but in Latin America. It's proven to be quite a challenge, but the people that have come to that have been so refreshed and gone back home, and just holiness people coming together with like-mindedness to be able to worship together. This past December, we had, actually it was November, one of the pastors came to me and he's like, Daniel, he's like, we're having trouble with the pastor's children, the pastors having the money to send their kids to school this next year. School year starts in the end of January, 1st of February, and said a lot of them, the education is free, they have a public system that is free, but you have to pay for your books and your uniform and your backpacks and all the, they have a list of supplies a mile long. And so this is a group of, this is all of our pastor's children that are here. It was a neat thing as we put word out and offerings and stuff began to come in, and we were able to cover for them to be able to get their backpacks and stuff. This is Pastor Mauricio. He's here in the middle. We went to a store that had, what do they call it? The Spanish word comes to my mind, but anyway, they have all the school supplies, very reasonable. So we went in and bought everything in bulk, and then Mauricio put all the backpacks together. Then we boxed them up and sent them out on buses to the different communities where the pastors could get them and give them to their children. This is some of the pastors' children. They received the backpacks full of school supplies, and I don't think we left any of them out. So it was good to see all of those kids go and be able to go to school and get their education. Our radio ministry is growing as well. We have an AM and FM station in San Luis, where we live, and then we have an FM station in San Pedro, which is one in San Pedro is 1,000-watt. This year they have celebrated for the San Luis radio station their 47th anniversary. And for San Pedro Sula, which is Estrella de Oro, Gold Star Radio, which Don Moore started back 44 years ago. Here are some of the programmers for the FM station. And here in San Luis, they had people come eight-hour bus rides in to come in and celebrate the anniversary. It was a pretty neat thing for everybody to come together and be able to celebrate that. Brother Edgardo was telling me that I'll get to that in a minute. This is their radio station. This is their tower site. This is an area where there are other radio stations and stuff along this ridge that are up through here. And something that's interesting, so back before COVID, there are gangs in Honduras, okay? All gangs are not bad. All of them are not mean. All of them are not out to get people. But they do control a lot of areas. And this area where our radio tower is in San Pedro Sula, they charge what they call a gang tax. And so up until before COVID, we had to pay the gang tax. And if you didn't pay the gang tax, it could be dangerous for you. It has been dangerous for other companies that have not paid the gang tax. And so we were paying the gang tax of around $100 a month. And it was interesting, as COVID came along, those people from the gang called the radio station to talk to the director. And in all the history of any dealings that we've had with these kind of people, they never go down on their price, and they never quit charging you, okay? That's just never going to happen. These people call, and they're like, we like y'all's radio station. We believe y'all are doing what's right. We're not going to charge you anymore. They haven't come back to ask for another penny from our radio station. Our radio station is the only one on this mountain that's not being charged. There is a whole line of them that go down through here, and every one of those people are still paying the tax to be safe in that area. It's interesting. There is a readout that you can pay for that's done through all the frequencies that are on the radio. If you were to scroll through in that area and listen to all the radio stations, we came in number 6. And number 6 for a Christian radio station is really big. We have a listening audience. I forget, he told me what the listening audience was, but it's over 50,000 people. Our radio station really has a huge impact on the surrounding area there in the coastal area. They're in the process of installing a solar system. They have raised part of the money for the solar system, but it'll also help cut their electricity. But up on that mountain, the electricity goes out so often that they're part of the time our radio is just off the air because there's no electricity. So they're putting a solar system in that'll hopefully give it 24-hour electricity. Now, Pastor Edgardo was telling me, he said, Brother Mountain, he said, one thing I want people to know is people, the radio takes the gospel out to some of these areas, but we are reaching into areas that you can't get to by car. So this community back up in the mountains, back down the river, is not accessible by any other means of transportation besides air and water. So when the hurricane, when we loaded those containers full of supplies to send down in 2020 and then 2021, some of what we sent down there were radios, okay? Because these people all up and down this river listen to our radio station. And so Pastor Edgardo coordinated the trip when we went up and we took radios to all those people that live along that river area through there. He goes back up. They invite him quite frequently to go up and visit with them. And this field, they put chairs out, and a whole crowd of people came out, and he had a church service for them just right there beside the river. But his ministry reaches, the radio ministry has opened doors and opened churches because of the gospel that goes out through the radio station. Another interesting holiday that they have in Honduras is called the Day of the Bible. We don't have anything like that here, I don't think. But the last week of September, they will have the Day of the Bible. And these people put on the largest parade. So Jesus Christ is Lord. Here you have angels, and here you've got the Ten Commandments. You got people with scripture written on their and it's just a march all the way through town. And it's interesting, the mayor of San Luis is not... He's not Christian. He's not a good man. But he told these people, he's like, y'all go plan your event and I'll pay for it. But he said, I don't want any squabbling between your churches. Y'all get out there and do this together. Because when you go to Honduras, they don't ask what church you're from. They want to ask, are you evangelical or are you Catholic? Okay, that's the way they distinguish between the two. So he said, no fighting between the evangelical churches. Y'all get together and do this. When we first went to San Luis, when EFM went to San Luis, there was us and one other evangelical church in town. So there was one Catholic church and a Baptist church and our Holiness church. Now there's over 40 different churches in San Luis in the same community. So the mayor had a good reason for telling them to get along. Another project that we undertook that some of you've already seen some of the pictures of was the well project. It still amazes me. I go to this town, and every time I go, just about every time I go, I walk away with a bag of beans or a stalk of bananas or some hugs. I walk away with, because these people were literally taking their leftover Pepsi bottles, and they would go down the mountain, down this little trail to this little trickle of water, and put it underneath that trickle and fill their 3-gallon bottles of water and then haul it up to their house. And that the ladies washed their laundry, they cooked their food, they did everything with the water that they hauled back to their house from that little trickle that was down there. And so when the medical team came to their community, Agua de Piedra, and they called me into a separate room, and they're like, Brother Melton, we need a well. And I was like, well, that's wonderful. There's a lot of people need a well. I'm not Mr. Moneybags. But I said, if you pray, I said, God can open the doors to send money through. And I said, I will talk about your well, but I don't have any rich uncle that I can just get you a well. Those people started fasting, and they started praying, and they started having revival services with this in mind. And lo and behold, if the Lord didn't open the door for a well to be provided for them, when everything came together, I'm gonna have to see if I can dig it out. But there was a man in town when the well rig came in and began to drill. This guy, all of them had to pay a certain amount. Okay, it was like, I don't know, $10 or $15 per person value that they all had to pay into the pot, because they had to dig the holes, and there was some part that was theirs out of the project. And this one guy was like, no, I'm not paying that. Y'all not going to find water. There's no way you're going to find water down there. He just declared up and down you weren't going to find water. And so they told him, if we do find water, you're going to be the first one that gets a bath in it. And lo and behold, when they turned that thing on, that pump on, and it started shooting water, it was, I think, a two-inch pipe out of there. Man, they grabbed that guy, and they're like, you get in that water. He got in the water, and man, they were taking shovelfuls, and they were going to bathe him good. Boy, they just soaked him down good. They were like, you had bad faith. We had revival over this thing, and your bad faith was something different. But anyway, it was neat to see them get water in their community. So this tap, Brother Loper is there turning on the tap. Those ladies now wash their clothes in their house. Still wash them by hand, but at least they're not hauling water from a mile or half, 2 miles away to be able to do that. The water project is still growing by leaps and bounds. We're still purifying water and selling water. The volume has gone up. We've about worn our trucks out. We're looking for other trucks to replace them with. More communities are now opening up and saying, hey, can you bring me 50 bottles and let me sell them to the community? Well, that's what we want to do. I don't want to sell them all door to door. I'd rather sell them a little bit cheaper and sell more volume and for them to sell them. So that's what we're doing in some of the communities. We'll take them a truckload of bottles of water, and they'll sell them in the community. And when their bottles are empty, then we'll take them another load and swap their empty bottles out for full ones. And that way they only pay for the water. The water is only about $1 for the 5-gallon bottle of water. But it's through volume that it brings in between $1,500 and $1,800 a month of profit. Y'all know that I love these projects to see what we can do to help people find a way to make a living, but at the same time providing for the ministry. Coffee is still going good. The bananas are still going good. The pizza shop right now is closed down because we're in the process of moving it up to the plaza. Before I left, I had a man and his family that was moving to San Luis from about 2-3 hours away. He told me, God's called me there. And I was like, okay. He was not from our church, but he is a Christian man. And some people just love to do the restaurant stuff. And I was like, well, come, I'll have you trained. So Yancey came down, and Yancey trained him. And the week before, or 2 weeks before, we're getting ready to come back to the U.S., this guy had received all the training. He's got all the recipes. He's got all the business plan. He's got the whole thing. And he writes me, and he says, I decided not to come. You can imagine the disappointment in my heart, that just my heart about went to the floor. And I was like, well, I don't know what else to do. So we shut the doors. So we've got a pizza shop all put together and ready to make pizza. And nobody to make pizza right now. But anyway, we decided the best thing to do for now was to close it down. So this is what it looked like when I came into town. And this little window right here was a little for sale sign. When I drove by there and felt like the Lord said, that's for y'all. God has done some wonderful things. This is the drawing of what it was going to look like. This is how it started. We had God answered prayer in a huge way. There was a big warehouse in the city that needed all the steel cleaned out of the building. In other words, it was used steel, but it was perfectly good. And we ended up getting it for scrap price. They hauled it out on trucks, and they began to put the building together, the plaza, up on the plaza. This is what the building looks like right now. It's not completely ready, but this is where the pizza shop will be in this area here. Upstairs, we'll have a coffee shop. We'll have 9 different places to rent out upstairs. And this area down here is where a bank will be going into. God opened some really, really big doors for a bank to be opened there. I felt like when we started this project, God said, you're going to have a bank. And I was like, man, how do you get a bank? You thought about that? How do you get a bank? I mean, that's big, isn't it? And I thought, I don't really know how to do this, but I'm brave. So I started knocking on doors. My motto in life is that it all depends on who you know. So I started asking my friends, who do you know that can help us get a bank? And I went to my one friend. He said, well, I think Banco Atlantida would do it. So we started knocking on that door. We knocked on that door, and we knocked on that door, and we never could get them to answer. So we went to BAC, B-A-C, and I knocked on their doors, and I knocked on their doors, and we wrote letters, and we went in, and they just told us we're not interested in being out in remote areas like that. And I was getting a little discouraged, and I said, Lord, what are we supposed to do now? Lord, you told me we're going to have a bank in there. And I was talking to a guy that works at another nonprofit medical facility in San Pedro Sula, in the big city. And I'm talking to him, and I'm like, yeah, it's like, we got this plaza, and I felt like we were going to have a bank in it. God was going to give us a bank. And he's like, oh, you want a bank? And I said, yeah. He said, well, here, let me give you a telephone. I got a friend. He'll give you a bank. And I thought, yeah, that's like telling me somebody's going to give me a lollipop. It just sounded too easy, okay? Like he's going to just give me a bank. And but I called the guy. And he didn't answer. I left a message, and his assistant called me back. And I gave him my spiel, and he said, okay, said Don Jose is in the United States. When he comes back, he'll get in contact with you. Do you think he called me back? Nah, he didn't call me back. But good old me, I had somebody refer to me in my younger years that when they filled out a reference of what they thought about Daniel as a missionary, they said he's like a bulldog. I don't know if that's good or that's bad, but I don't give up very easy. And so I went from bank to bank until I found out where Don Jose's office was. And I found out where his office was, and I went in and asked the guard. I said, I need to speak to Don Jose Lino. He's like, do you have an appointment? I said, no. He's like, you can't take that. I had a little bag. Well, you can't take that bag with you. Okay, go put it in the car, come back. Well, he said he'll see you now. So I go upstairs, and here's Don Jose Lino. He comes out, and he speaks to me in perfect English. How you doing, man? I was like, well, I'm doing just fine. How are you doing? It's nice to speak a little English around here. And he's like, hey, come on in. Let's talk a little bit. And so I walked in, and I told him, we have a plaza in San Luis. All of the income, if we can finish this plaza, and we can put your bank in it, and we can get these other businesses going here, the profits from this business are going to go to support a medical clinic that is for helping the poor people. I said, we can share the gospel with people. We can also help them physically if we can get this thing off the ground. And I need y'all to put a bank in San Luis. When I got done telling him all that, he sat back and he crossed his arms, and he says, you're not going to believe this. He said, our bank has wanted to put a branch in that town for years, and I have been the only person standing in the way of that happening. He said, can you imagine what the board's going to say now when I say, hey, let's go to San Luis? Sure enough, they came to San Luis. The vice presidents and the president didn't come, but all the inspectors and the security, and they all came to San Luis in their bright yellow shirts, and they walked down all the main streets. You talk about feeling conspicuous. Walked down all the main streets of San Luis looking at San Luis to see if they approved on putting a bank in this community. And at the end of the day, they approved to put a bank in San Luis. It was interesting, about 3 days later, a helicopter comes in. That first bank that I talked to about coming, all of a sudden they were interested in putting a bank in San Luis now, and they had another bank that was interested in putting a bank. It was so funny how it all happened, but we signed a contract, and Don Jose told me, he said, Daniel, you won't believe the people that have called me trying to get this contract away from you. He's like, I've just taken every one of their messages up and ripped them up and thrown them in the trash. He said, we're on the same page. He said, they've given it to me cheaper than you. They've given me more square footage than what you're giving me. But he said, we want to help you do what you're doing. Our bank is into helping people do what y'all are doing. And, you know, that's just a God thing. So they are supposed to be starting in the next month to, they have to completely outfit this thing. I guess build their vault. They've got sensors they put on the walls, do this whole thing. But people, we got a bank. Can you believe we got a bank? I still can't believe we got a bank. I guess I'll believe it when it opens up. But anyway, they signed a 10-year contract. That gives us stability for 10 years of a certain amount of income coming there. Now, we still have a lot to do. This building is not paid for. It's interesting. It's an interesting investment because anything that is invested in this building is an investment that will continue to give for a lifetime. As long as there are profits coming out of this building, their profits will go to help support the clinic and help support the ministry that we have there in San Luis. And I took way too long telling you all that. Now I got to hurry. Oh, we got all night, don't we? How long does Brother Ziegler preach? This is just a big group. We were having a Christmas get together, and this is a big group of all of our employees and their families and stuff that came together for Christmas. When our medical teams go out into these communities, evangelism is our top priority. Everybody has to go through evangelism service before they can be seen. It is neat to see the amount of people that give their heart to Christ throughout that week. Sometimes we go to some communities and a lot of people are, there's been a big impact of evangelism in that community, but other communities we go to and there can be up to 60, 70 people in that community that give their heart to Christ. For me, it's worth what we pay and what we do to go to that community and take medicine to that community to be able to share the gospel with those people. This year has been, like I said, an interesting year. So we had a fall team, then we had a spring team. We're getting ready to have a fall team the October 4th through the 11th, I think it is. But after our spring team, we had a doctor by the name of Dr. Jeff Darr. I met him at a medical conference in Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky. And it's a Christian medical conference where there are medical people from all over that want to serve in medicine around the world. They come to that conference to find places to serve. And I found out about it about 3 years ago, and I have been going for 3 years and getting to know people. And I got to know Dr. Jeff Darr. He's an ENT surgeon. He had his own practice in Arizona, very prosperous practice. And in the middle of his prosperity, God told him, I want you to sell your practice, and I want you to go into full-time ministry doing medicine around the world. And he laughed, and he said, God, he said, you know you don't sell ENT. Well, let me back up just a little bit. He said, okay, God, that's fine. Let's sell this business in. And so he picked up the phone, and he called a friend of his that's a realtor, and he said, hey, I need to sell my business. And the guy laughed at him, and he's like, Jeff, he said, this takes a minimum of 3 years to sell a practice like yours. You don't sell this from one day to the other. So he said he went back to praying and asking God, what am I supposed to do? God said, just wait. Within a month, someone had come into his office, bought everything, kept his employees, just completely bought him out, and left him sitting on God's burner to start his ministry around the world. He came to San Luis. What his ministry is he goes to the universities. So all of the universities, Indiana State as well, but right now he's working through Texas A&M, through Auburn, through Clemson University, through, I don't know, he's got a list of them where these young people want to study medicine, okay? But in order to study medicine, they have to have certain requirements that they have to meet to be able to get into the program. A lot of those requirements include writing a resume of service that they have served. Well, an easy way for them to get service is come to a third world country. So what he does is he has recruits that goes in and recruits all of these med students, pre-med students, and these wannabe med students. And so he brings them all three on these medical teams to Central America, takes them to Yucatan, takes some to the Middle East, and it's an interesting mix because all of our medical teams with evangelistic faith missions, our evangelism is to the Honduran people. But what Dr. Jeff is looking at is he's evangelizing those medical students. So every morning they get up and they have a 45-minute to an hour devotional. In the evening, he evangelizes those students. Every night they are there. It don't matter if we get done with our event at 9 o'clock at night, he's still going to have an hour and a half devotional with them, and they go to bed at midnight. But his goal and his mission is to evangelize those people. Tiffany looked at me the other day. She's like, Daniel, isn't it interesting? We're being missionaries to our own people in Central America. And it is. Dr. Jeff has got a system that he brings these young people in. A lot of them don't come. They come from split homes, from non-Christian families, don't have a clue about God. And by the time that week's over, they've got a really good picture of who God is and what he can do for them. It's turned out really cool. And it's a lot of work. This is just some pictures from different medical teams, from different stuff. I don't know. We had some crazy kids riding in the back of here. I don't know if that was a truck or a, what was it? You remember? Anyway, this dear lady, it's interesting. Tony, when we do eyeglasses, he makes them read the Bible. And a lot of them have their own Bible with them. And a lot of them haven't read that Bible for years. And whenever he puts glasses on their face and they pull out that Bible and they start looking at that Bible, their face lights up. And I tell you what, that's just the best picture to see their face glow because they haven't been able to read for years and all of a sudden they can read the Bible again. It's priceless, the look on their face. Pastor Amaldo is, he's one of a kind. He is a young man that God touched at a young age. He was a guard at Evangelistic Faith Mission at the clinic. For years, he served as a guard. First, he was a bank guard. Then he came to work for the clinic, and he was a guard at the clinic. He had a family of three children, a boy and two girls. He got discouraged with life, and like a lot of them do in their late 20s, early 30s, they have a wife and they have children. They look around them, and they're like, there is nothing here for me. I'm going to the United States. And that's a lot of their opinion. They will pack their bags, and they will come to the United States to look for work. And he had his bags packed. He was ready to go. He had decided there was nothing in San Luis for him. At that time, we were in the process of rebuilding or remodeling part of our kitchen. The termites had just eaten our kitchen. The roof was out of the rafters were out of wood, and it was just completely demolished. And the contractor was from one of our churches, and he approached Amaldo and he said, "Hey, before you leave, would you come work with me and just help me do this job in San Luis? Because you're in San Luis, and I can trust you, and you can help me with this job." And Amaldo agreed. He stayed in San Luis to help him do that job. He didn't know that God had another plan for him. And as he began to work with Mr. Gregorio, who was an established Christian in one of our city churches, as he began to work with him, Gregorio began to evangelize him and really got Amaldo to turn his life completely over to Christ. God called Amaldo to preach. Amaldo went through the Bible school and began to study, began to preach. God has given him a gift. He deals with a lot of our situations. We deal with a lot of satanic stuff in our area. It's not hidden like it is here. It's in your face, some of the stuff that we deal with. And God has given him the gift to be able to deal with that kind of stuff. He goes out with us on the medical teams. And he is passionate about seeing people one to Christ. His wife is standing right there beside him. There are two peas in a pod. Where you find one, you'll always find the other. During our medical team, she's at the kitchen at 5 o'clock in the morning patting out tortillas for everybody. And she pats out tortillas and works until we leave at 8. Then she goes out with us to the community and she does the evangelism for the children. When we get back about 4, she goes back to the kitchen and cooks in the kitchen till about 7. And then goes home for a few hours. So I don't know how she does it. But God has blessed them, and it's been interesting to see his story and how God has taken him from a life he was fixing to completely dispose of his family and everything and walk away from it and to see where God has brought him to now. All right, the babies are tired of it. I'm hurrying. Our surgery team, God, it's really neat to see what God's doing through the surgery teams. We are not having any surgery teams right now, but the ones we have had, it's been neat. Pastor Omar has taken that on him. Anytime we have him, he shows up to evangelize. This dear lady came to us. She had been all over Honduras trying to find help. She had breast cancer and couldn't find help. She came to our clinic, and Dr. Coleman was able to do surgery for her. It did not solve her problem, but it gave her more time to be with her three daughters before she passed away. This man here, it was interesting. Pastor Omar had gone and talked to him about his heart, about giving his heart to Jesus, and he's like, I will, just as soon as this surgery's done, as soon as I recoup, I'm going to go to church and I'll get straightened out. And so anyway, he got wheeled into pre-op area, and they're hooking up his IVs, and I walked over to him, and I grabbed his hand, and his hand was all sweaty and sticky, and his respirations were real heavy, and I began to talk to him about coffee and all this different stuff, and I was like, I got around to, you know, how are you and God getting along? He's like, well, we're not too good right now, but as soon as I get done with this, and I'm like, do you want to wait that long? I was like, you know, we just never know when God's gonna pull our ticket. And he's like, well, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and pray. So I called Omar over there, and you know, you just had to be there to experience the peace that swept over that whole area. His hands dried up, his respirations went back to normal. He was totally calm, he was totally at peace. When Jesus was in at heart, it made a world of difference in what kind of person he was, even going into surgery. So God just opens doors after doors. Anybody ever had gallstones? This guy had a ton of gallstones. His wife wanted the gallstones to take home as a... I guess that was the trophy for him anyway. That looks painful, don't it? You medical people ought to know. Anyway, this is our clinic staff that's there. Part of what we have run up against in the clinic, and I'll try to wrap it up here pretty quick. I had asked the government to come and look at our clinic and tell us ways that we could make it better, and they didn't come. I went, they actually signed a letter that they acknowledged that I requested help, and they didn't come. But when they did come, they didn't come to help. They came to try to close us down. They came with their tape that was to seal the clinic and close it up. They had no plans of leaving us open to operate. But God touched their heart when they were there. They came in. We have operated for over 45 years with nurse midwives. They told us, they said, you need to put a doctor on staff or we're going to close you. We're like, okay, but there's nothing wrong with nurse midwives. Nope. I said, there's been over 10,000 babies born with nurse midwives. You know, what's the problem now? It's just the way it's going to be. I said, okay. I began to pray because I had three requirements of what I wanted to see in a doctor. I wanted to be a good doctor, number one. But second, they had to be a Christian. And thirdly, they had to know what compassionate medicine is. And there is a lot of non-compassionate medicine in Honduras. If you go into the public system, it's a nightmare. And so I began to pray and ask God what we were supposed to do. Out of the blue, in February of last year, this lady called me who had helped me with some legal work. She's like, you still looking for a doctor? And I said, yeah. She said, I got one for you. I said, you do? She said, yep. I said, well, I'll come to the Capitol and I'll meet her. So I went and I sat down with Vanessa, Dr. Vanessa, and began to talk to her. And Dr. Vanessa had graduated from medical school a year before, couldn't find a job, started working in a call center, couldn't find a job to work as a doctor, okay? And I told her, I said, come to San Luis. We need you in San Luis. And she prayed about it, and she came to San Luis. That girl, the devil has tried to run her out of town so many times, it's not funny. When she came to San Luis and began to start working in San Luis, we found her an apartment in town. One of the first things that happened was the water went off, okay? The town turned the water off to our end of town. Now, we've got a well on the property, so we've got water, but she was living outside the property, so she had no water. She was over a week without water in her apartment, so the valve got left open. So she's at work one day when somebody comes and says, oh, Dr. Vanessa, you got water coming out from under your door. So she hurries to her house to find that all of her books and her clothes and different stuff that was sitting on the floor was all flooded in water and lost everything. There was another situation where she had been working. She had been delivering babies at night, and she had been working during the daytime, and she was exhausted, and she went in at night, and she just crashed on her bed and left her hand hanging over the side of the bed. She woke up in the middle of the night with something chewing on her finger. It was a rat. There was thing after thing that was the devil tried so hard to run her off. But God's got a plan for what's going on. I don't know, you know, when I look back at what all that we have been through with this clinic right now, the government came in. I think I've got this lady's picture. I'll show it to her if I can find it here real quick. Yeah, because she's not a very nice lady. So this lady here is the Minister of Health. So she came to San Luis, and I said, I'm going to go see that lady. Everybody around me, our local senators, our local House representatives, Daniel, this lady's from our area. She's going to help us. Daniel, don't you worry. She's going to help us. And so I went into that meeting thinking she was going to help me. And instead of help us, she said, I want you to close it down. Your construction cannot move forward until we approve your plans. I said, ma'am, I brought y'all my plans for the clinic, and y'all told me that we were an independent organization to go get somebody else to do it. And she said, no, you can't go any further. She shut us down for 5 months. When we came back, when we finally, so she sent, these are two different pictures here, okay? You can see the divider. So here we are. This is a lady who's on the state level. And she told me one day when she came out there to inspect us, she's like, you're in our eyes. We're watching you. I'm like, ooh, okay, they're watching me. And it was a fight between good and evil. And I can't express enough of how many prayers went up and how much I butted heads with that woman. And I went one day, she came into our clinic, and she went through, and she just, this is wrong, and that's wrong, and all this is wrong. And man, my blood pressure went up. My red hair, you know, redheads usually have a temper, don't they? Well, mine's sanctified, okay? But it's still, my blood pressure gets up every now and then. It got to the explosion part. And I came and I found that lady in town, and I was like, what in the world are you doing? She came to our clinic. I said, I have a written paper, and I showed her the written paper where I requested help. And what you came to do, I said, you left all my staff in tears. I can get my blood pressure all up again thinking about it. It was so good. I said, you left everybody in tears. And I said, now we don't know how to go forward. Well, she left, and she was mad at me. But what the Minister of Health did was she appointed this man here, who is an engineer and one of the higher levels of permissions that can be given. And so she appointed him to help us draw what we needed to have drawn. That was very unusual. We called him, went and sat down with him. They vetoed our plans. Everything that we had, they vetoed. They wanted to move everything. The plan they sent us, we needed a staff. We needed another 30 people to staff the clinic. Anyway, it could go on and on. But in the end of the day, this guy brought us into his office, and 2 hours later, him and his friend helped redraw everything that we needed so that we could get permission to continue on with the construction. In January, we picked up the construction again. Now, what they did do to us was they changed the walls had to be changed, the plumbing had to be changed, the floors had to be cut up. So in our new building that we've got going in, so this is the clinic building where it stands right now, they told us we had to put an elevator in, we had to put a second floor ramp in, we had to cut up the floors in the new building to move all the plumbing. The old surgery center, we had to tear all the walls out, we had to cut up the floor in there and change everything as well as all the electrical stuff. I tell you what, I look back at it, and I came to a point where I said, Lord, I can't keep doing this, because we started out asking for this much money, and then we moved it to this much money, and now they've done this to us and added this much money. And I said, Lord, I just can't keep doing this. And the Lord told me, he's like, you need to take it a day at a time. And I had to back up, and I really had to reevaluate, whose project is this? Is this Daniel's project, or is this God's project? Now, a friend of mine came along, and he's like, listen, Daniel, can you imagine Noah out building that great big old ark? Did God leave Noah in the middle of building that ark? No. When God was in it, he gave Noah everything he needed, and it took a long time to build that ark. And I was like, well, I don't want to have a long time to do this, but it is God's ministry, and so we'll continue to move forward. They've told us we have to have a gynecologist, we have to have a pediatrician, there's a whole slew of stuff. But God is good. Things are moving forward, and it's looking good. So this is the clinic building the way it is right now. They are painting, doing stuff. All the walls are up on the inside. This is our plaza building as it's come together. And it's neat to see how God is putting everything together. This is the people from the bank where we signed the contract for the banking. This was the group that came out to San Luis and walked the streets. All the other ones had yellow shirts on. I want to tell you a story about Adonai. I got this one and one more picture and I'll be done. So I want to tell you about Adonai. Adonai is a special person to me. So I just want to share a little bit of his testimony with you, all right? His dad was a pastor. His dad was pastor in a little remote community out in the middle of nowhere called Triumphal. A lot of our pastors, elder pastors that we have right now, Adonai's dad was responsible for leading them to Christ. Adonai's dad had some, there were some issues in their family and they had to leave the ministry. But in Adonai's heart, he had given his heart to God. He felt like God was calling him to preach. So when his dad had to leave the ministry, Adonai came to San Luis to study in the Bible school thinking he was called to preach. After he was a year studying in the Bible school, he's like, I'm not called to preach. He's like, this is not for me. But Lord, where do you want me? One of the missionaries grabbed him and pulled him toward the radio station and said, listen, I want you to learn how to run the radio station. So Adonai began to operate the radio station. His program started at 5 o'clock in the morning. There were people, there were churches that were started because of his devotionals and his service and what he had done through the radio station. The day came, he continued to work through his education that the local, they have a practice time in the local bank, and the local bank offered him the presidency of the bank. And he told the bank, no. He said, God's called me to work in his ministry. I'll continue to work in the ministry. He stayed with the radio station and kept working through the radio station. Now, 2015 came, and we were planning to return back to the States. And I'm thinking, who in the world could we put in this position? And so I went to Adonai after I'd prayed, and I said, Adonai, is there any way you'd be interested in stepping into more administrative role? And God opened the door for Adonai and his family to step in. My passion is to train local people to do what we're doing. Now, I would love to train them and then just completely move out of the way. What I have learned over many years is I can train them and I can step to one side, but there still needs to be a mentorship. And I don't know how long that mentorship needs to go on, but God has given me a special man that has a heart after God. And he is one of the strongest Christians that I have run into in Honduras. He's faithful. He's true. I had to apologize to him after I tested him and tried him so hard when he started out, because it just everybody, it's just the corruption is just everywhere. But God has done a work in his life and his family. And Adonai and his wife both moved onto the property. His wife is working in the water plant to be sure all the finances stay straight in the water plant. And Adonai's job is he takes care of all of the finances, all of the reports to the government, all of the there's lots of report levels of reports that we have to do for the government. And he takes care of all that stuff. God has done a work in his life, and it's neat to see someone that from clear back when he was a child gave his heart to Christ. He's now been working with us for over 30 years in the ministry there. And we thank God for helping him to come and be there. Anyway, we have Denny's in Honduras. For those of you that haven't been there, can you believe we have Denny's? In closing, I just want to share this story with you. Our clinic is there for evangelism. And you never know when that evangelism opportunity is going to knock on the door. But this night, or this morning, this man had been, at midnight, he had left his community with a sick family to come get medicine from the clinic. On his way to the clinic, someone had attacked him and left him in the ditch for dead. Somebody the next morning found him, picked him up, brought him to the clinic, and Kayleen, who is the girl in the middle, she graduated from our Bible school as well as with a nursing degree, and she was attending that morning, and she had the opportunity to pray with that man and lead him to Christ. That's what we're trying to do. Not just be a place where people can come and receive medical attention. We want to give good medical attention, but we want to be a place where people can come. They can have their physical needs. They can have their spiritual needs met. I look forward to the day that we can have a full-time pastor at the clinic. In the new building, he's got an office already in there. I counted an office in there for the pastor who's going to work there, because the opportunities we have as people come to our doors to win them to Christ, to share the gospel with them. I was talking to Mary Bell, who's in charge of, she's a nurse administrator. She said, Brother Mountain, she's like, it's incredible the people that come through these doors. And she's like, they come in saying this and this and this is wrong. She's like, but when it all said and it's boiled down, she said, we sit down with them and put our arm around them and we talk to them and we pray with them. And I have a picture of one of the girls. They got the guitar out. They were singing to them. And the person didn't have anything wrong with them. When they got done praying with them and they got done talking to them and reading scripture with them, the person looked at them and said, you know, I think I feel better. I don't think I need anything. And walked out of the clinic and went back home. And that's what we're there for. We're there, we're using something that everybody needs to facilitate being able to share the gospel with the people that come through our doors. I think that's it. No, I got some more. My problem is I don't know when to quit. We appreciate your prayers. Thank you all so much for your prayers and your support. Listen, the group that comes mostly every fall, some of you in the spring have come, but it means a whole lot to us. It's encouragement to us. I can't do it without y'all. I can't do it without the other medical people that come. But the people that come have a heart to serve people and to see people one to Christ, and that makes such a world of difference when we go into these communities and are able to share Christ with them. So from our heart, we deeply appreciate that.